Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
King Charles gives titles to Harry and Meghan's children as he honors Queen Elizabeth at the Commonwealth Day service.
In succeeding Her Majesty as head of the Commonwealth, I draw great strength from her example.
The royals declined Lilibet's christening as preparations for the coronation may include Harry and Meghan.
Neither of them come. Only Harry comes. They both go. The children go. The children don't go. I even saw a story this week about how it's unkind that Lilibet and Archie won't be at the service. And I'm thinking, do you know how young those kids are?
Plus, royal photographer Christopher Jackson shares behind-the-scenes details of his most famous photos.
And I think the one thing that I noticed when I photographed them, they have this incredible ability to connect with people and engage with people across different cultures, different nationalities, and different countries.
We've got that plus so much more on today's Royally Us. Hello to our fellow royal lovers and welcome to Royally Us. I'm Christina, that's Christine, and we got some big news this week. Of course, the Commonwealth Day service is an annual event and King Charles turned out for the first time as king. So a lot of news to get to this week.
Lots of historical moments this week. I think lots of sort of big changes and lots of titles to talk about this week.
Lots of titles. Before we do, let's see what you guys had to say about last week's show. Beverly said, if he did the therapy sessions out of the goodness of his heart, then why charge people for it and make them buy his book? This isn't someone who cares for others. This is someone who wants to make money off of you. Ooh, yikes. Talking about, obviously, Prince Harry's virtual book event that he had last week where he charged a pretty penny to attend.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point. I can't remember. It feels like several weeks back now, if the proceeds were going to a cause. But even still, a lot of people mentioned that the price was pretty high. Yeah. So I wonder if maybe that was an attempt to only make sure that the people in attendance were really interested. I don't know. That's a good question.
Very good question. And then LG says, I think them being kicked out but still invited shows that the palace are respecting the fact that he doesn't want to be a working royal. And as such, the perks of the job at the taxpayers' expense go back. But staying true to the royal saying, they remain much loved family members. So they're just a family member coming to his dad's event without the benefits of the job. However, it sounds like the kids now have the royal title. So who knows what that means now? I mean, I feel like they, you know, it's the right thing to do to invite. And we'll see if they attend. We still don't know. $1 million question. We're going to be asking from now until May 6th.
Yeah. I think, yeah, we'll be guessing until the final moment. Lots of good points are being brought up now. So we'll have to wait and see.
Definitely. All right. Well, let's get into our royal roundup. Kick it off with King Charles, who attended his first Commonwealth Day service as king. He and Queen Camilla joined other members of the royal family at Westminster Abbey for the annual event that honors the 56 countries that make up the Commonwealth. Now, during the event, he did take some time to honor his late mother, Queen Elizabeth. Take a look.
In succeeding Her Majesty as head of the Commonwealth, I draw great strength from her example, together with all that I have learnt from the extraordinary people I have met throughout the Commonwealth over so many years.
Always a beautiful service that turns out a lot of the royal family members. And, you know, it was nice that he took some time, of course, to dedicate some moments to his late mother.
Yeah, this is always a really popular event in the royal calendar. Most of the major royals are always known to attend. Prince Charles gave a speech, which is not something that Queen Elizabeth did in the past. It's not necessarily a break in tradition. It's just sort of a sign of how he wants to do things moving forward. But it was really well received. There's so many great performances from, you know, different places around the Commonwealth. It's such a beautiful representation of what an amazing community they still have between these Commonwealth nations.
Definitely, it was a beautiful service. And of course, the fashion was a topic of conversation, of course, with the Prince and Princess of Wales. She wore this beautiful white embroidered print navy peplum jacket with a skirt. And she, of course, paired it with some very fashionable accessories, including a pair of sapphire and diamond earrings that previously belonged to Princess Diana. She also wore the Prince of Wales feathers brooch, which was a gift from King Charles, and it was previously owned by Princess Diana. It featured blue sapphires, diamonds, rubies, and emeralds that represent the Welsh flag. So everybody had to hold on to their hats. It was a windy day, but fashionable, of course.
It was very fashionable. And this is one of those events that is a uniquely royal fashion event. There's not really any other event in your lifetime from normal people where you're going to be in sort of, you know, practically couture suits and coats and hats. It's a very specific outfit, a specific look. And they looked really royal. Kate looked so royal. The new Duchess of Edinburgh, which we'll talk about in a minute, Sophie looked very royal. The Queen was there and she looked very royal. But yes, Kate looked amazing. Her outfit was from Erdem, which is a designer she's worked with for years and years, and sort of has a very memorable look to his styles. And something interesting that we noticed was with Kate's hat, it was almost the exact same silhouette as her hat from Queen Elizabeth II's funeral. And that creates a really great opportunity to compare the two moments from, you know, the funeral, which was such a historic event, to this new, more joyful celebration, but also one of the first major events in the royal family as the new royal family. So lots of great moments, lots of, you know, comparisons with the brooch and the jewelry belonging to Diana, lots of ties to the family, I think.
It's hard to believe that 3 years ago, this was the final event for Harry and Meghan. It's
mind-blowing. Yes, someone told me that and I said, no, that can't be right. But yes, it was this event 3 years ago. That was the last official royal event with Meghan and Harry as the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. It feels 100 years ago, but also just
yesterday. I know, time flies. Well, we, like you said before, we have some big title news going on this week, and Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's children, Archie and Lilibet, are now using their official royal titles. According to the British Royal Family's website, which was updated on March 9th, the children will now be known as Prince Archie of Sussex and Princess Lilibet of Sussex, in line with their parents' titles, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. A spokesperson told a GMA that the children's titles have been a birthright since their grandfather became monarchy. This matter has been settled for some time in alignment with Buckingham Palace. This comes after, so back in 2021, when they did their big CBS tell-all interview, Meghan claimed that the royals didn't want to grant Archie a title as it would be against protocol, and that not having that title would mean a lack of security. So is it surprising now that they're getting these titles, or is this just protocol?
Yeah, there's so many surprising things in this turn of events. When Archie was born, Meghan and Harry said in a statement that he would just be Archie Mountbatten Windsor because they want him to have as normal of a life as possible. We've now completely 180'd that to the other side of the coin, which is that he's now Prince Archie of Sussex. He could not have a more royal title. And it also points out those issues that we saw in the interview that people were able to very easily fact check. So Archie was never really entitled to a title. I mean, they could have passed major laws that would have involved Parliament to give Archie a title, but if they wanted Archie to have as normal of a childhood as possible, there wasn't much point in that. So Archie was never really eligible for a title while the Queen Elizabeth II was still alive, and he's never really been entitled to security. So those were both sort of twisted to fit the narrative that Meghan and Harry wanted to share. Mm-hmm. Now we're finding out, okay, those two things weren't true. When Queen Elizabeth II died, and King Charles became the monarch, all the grandchildren in the male line of the monarch are all eligible for the title of prince or princess. Right. So they automatically became eligible to use that title. And so far, Meghan and Harry haven't used it. It's totally at their parents' discretion. It's really up to Meghan and Harry to make that choice. Meghan and Harry have now made the choice, and Buckingham Palace is being really surprisingly supportive, I think. Just, okay, that's fine. That's who you are now, you know? And so now they are Prince Archie and Princess Lilibet.
It's so interesting. It's like one foot in, one foot out. Can't decide what they want to do. So, I don't know. I can't figure them out. I can't.
I don't think anyone can. This might be hints of what we're going to see, you know, at the coronation. We've sort of talked about, are they trying to not reconciliate, but sort of, you know, olive branches that seem to be sticking out all over the place. This is a really interesting twist. And a lot of people have pointed out that this completely goes against everything they've been saying. Harry saying that his life growing up with a title was so terrible. You know, these statements of, you know, they won't have titles. So we're definitely getting mixed messages here. I don't know that we're going to get any clarity, but if you're confused, you have a right to be.
If you're confused, we're confused, but yes, we're trying to figure it all out. One thing we are not confused about is Prince Edward's new title, and he will inherit his late father, Prince Philip's Duke of Edinburgh honor. A statement read that His Majesty the King has been pleased to confer the Dukedom of Edinburgh Borough upon the Prince Edward, Earl of Wessex and Forfar, on the occasion of His Royal Highness's 59th birthday. The title will be held by Prince Edward for His Royal Highness's lifetime. This is really nice. I'm sure, you know, they added that the new Duke and Duchess of Edinburgh are proud to continue Prince Philip's legacy of promoting opportunities for young people of all backgrounds to reach their full potential. I'm sure that he was very touched by this title and, of course, honoring his father and continuing on in this legacy.
Yeah, this was really special. Prince Edward was not given a dukedom title upon his marriage to his wife, Sophie. And the ongoing rumor was that Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, wanted to pass that down to his son. It's not usually really a hereditary title. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. And then when the Duke of Edinburgh died, it kind of automatically passed to Charles, who, as we know, does not need an additional title. He has so many.
Right.
We were all sort of waiting anxiously for when that would be officially conferred to his brother, Prince Edward. So on Prince Edward's birthday, that was his birthday gift from his brother, the king. And Edward and Sophie went to Edinburgh on that day, conveniently scheduled a royal visit on that day. And they met with the people of Edinburgh and had a really special reception. And the whole time, Sophie, the Duchess of Edinburgh, has tears in her eyes. I think she's just so happy and very touched by how much support they received from this news. I think it was really, really sweet.
It is really special. A birthday to remember, definitely.
Yes.
Well, this was an event to remember because the Princess of Wales visited the Irish Guards as they trained in rural England, marking the first time with the regiment since she became honorary colonel following the death of Queen Elizabeth. She succeeded Prince William, who King Charles made the new colonel of the Welsh Guards, fitting his new title, of course, as the Prince of Wales. She sported a camouflage coat. She got down and dirty, as she usually does, and learned how to help battlefield casualty, about anti-poaching. So she really does. She does get down and dirty, and she really gets her hands in there.
I think compared to how we saw her this week at the Commonwealth service, to that, I mean, get you a girl who can do both. She's so well-rounded. She just looks amazing in every setting. But I think she, everywhere she goes, she really looks excited to be there. She's genuinely interested in what she's doing. But yeah, this was such a juxtaposition to how we normally see her. You know, she's got her hair down in a French braid. She's in muddy boots and camouflage. I absolutely loved it. I love seeing her sort of really getting stuck into that role.
Love to see it. All right. Well, now it is time to spill some royal tea. And this is some big news for Meghan, because it looks like she is possibly having her old blog, The Tig, set for a comeback. So according to a document that was obtained by Us Weekly, she filed with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and it's potentially to reboot the version of the website, which consisted of, it was a lifestyle website about, you know, articles, interviews, cooking, things like that, and relationships, fashion, style, kind of like the whole thing. The relaunch date has not been announced, but it could go, according to the Mirror, as live as early next week. So what do we think about Meghan relaunching the Tig?
I mean, this is almost unsurprising because the way she left the Tig was a bit mysterious. She sort of, you know, it still has a holding page,
yes,
saying thank you for the memories and, you know, we'll see you again soon somehow. And so that was very, that was such a strange way to close down a website that was never, ever going to relaunch. So the fact that it's coming back, I don't think is a surprise to many people. It's been so often compared to Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop, Kourtney Kardashian's Poosh. So I think that there's definitely space in the market for this kind of website. And the question will be, how popular does it become?
Oh, I'm sure the website might crash. We'll have to wait and see. All right. Well, in some other news, sources told the Daily Mail that Buckingham Palace is preparing for Harry and Meghan to attend the coronation. Palace staff have begun organizing logistics for the historic occasion, have been instructed to include them in their program, even though that there has been no word that they're going to be coming. An insider told the outlet that Harry and Meghan are being factored into all of the planning, the cars, the seating plans, dining arrangements, everything. No one knows for certain whether this means they have definitely accepted. It could, of course, be just in case they do, but it's clearly not a no. Just tell them yes or no so they can plan accordingly.
It's all out of our misery, and this will live on the thing. I've heard so much, so many theories that they'll both come to the UK, but only Harry is going to attend the public events. Right. Neither of them come. Only Harry comes. They both go. The children go. The children don't go. I even saw a story this week about how it's unkind that Lilibet and Archie won't be at the service. And I'm thinking, do you know how young those kids are?
Yeah. Right?
Archie and Lily are not going to the very long formal church service.
No way. That sounds like a recipe for disaster.
It's a recipe for disaster. So I think, yeah, we really just want to know, Harry and Meghan, please just tell us your plan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Please just tell us our plans. Please, we just want to know. Well, we did know that they did have a big event for their daughter, Lilibet. On March 3rd, they had their christening for their daughter. An insider did tell People magazine that the royal family were invited. They did not attend, but 20 to 30 guests did attend the intimate gathering, including Meghan's mother, Lilibet's godfather, Tyler Perry, and an unnamed godmother. Not so surprising that the royal family did not attend. I mean, it's, a far trip and, things are a little icy still.
Long trip. Things are a bit icy. And unfortunately, as we're finding with the coronation, I'm sure they felt this way with Lilibet's christening, is that once you involve that family drama, it becomes a much bigger story. It becomes a thing. And maybe they just wanted a nice, quiet, sweet day for Lilibet where she was celebrated and surrounded by, her friends and family out in California. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes you just want a drama-free family day.
Drama-free. That's all you want. This is interesting. So Prince William and Kate Middleton are careful not to show some PDA during royal engagements, but behind palace doors, it seems like they're just like us, just a normal married couple. In a new book from author Tom Quinn titled Gilded Youth, An Intimate History of Growing Up in the Royal Family, it features some interviews from palace staff. And he told Fox News, someone at the palace told me about the nicknames they have for each other, but it's not all sweetness. They have terrible rows where they throw things at each other. Kate might seem to be a very calm person and William also, but it's not always true because the big stress for William and Kate is that they're constantly surrounded by palace aides. It's like a Jane Austen novel. I'm sure, it can't always be easy having your life scrutinized and constantly followed. It's got to be a lot of pressure on a marriage. And I think it probably takes a really strong marriage, as we've seen, to survive this.
Definitely. I can't imagine, constantly being scrutinized. I think a lot of us, if someone watched our marriages 24/7, it would be questionable. Mm-hmm. But, we do know that Prince William has quite a strong temper behind closed doors. He seems to become, have grown into it and has better calming mechanisms, if you will. So this is, it's always interesting to get a behind the scenes look. I think so many of us just want to know, who are they really? What goes on behind closed doors?
Right. Tell us everything. Sarah Ferguson is speaking out what goes on behind closed doors between her and Prince Andrew after watching him go through his public scrutiny. She she told GMA that it's so sad. We've been there for each other. You know, when I've gone through really bad times in the past, Andrew's always been there. He's exceptionally kind, and he is a very seriously good grandfather. He's very steadfast for the girls. We are women that also have had to see the demise of a very strong man, and that has been really difficult to see. I don't really know how to react to that one.
Maybe read the room.
Right. Read the room.
Her press tour has been so strong, and I've loved seeing her represented really, really well, and, you know, sort of quirky and charming and the fun aunt, if you will. But maybe leave the Prince Andrew stuff behind.
Yeah, leave that behind. I mean, he did deserve all the public scrutiny for what has happened. And yes, it has to be hard for his daughters to see that, but, you know, not a good person. All right. Well, now it is time to break down the royal rules. And joining us this week is famed royal photographer Christopher Jackson. He is breaking down his new book, Charles III, A King and His Queen. Take a look. Well, Christopher, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I was just telling you before, this book is absolutely beautiful. The stories behind it, the photographs. I mean, you do amazing work, but this is exceptional. It really is. I love that you said that you wanted readers to gain an insight into the genuine characters. So how would you describe these characters, King Charles and Queen Consort?
Thank you, Christine. I've been lucky enough to photograph them for sort of 20 years now. And I think, like you say, across the formal engagements, the family moments, and, you know, even capturing them enjoying some of their rare downtime. So hopefully, like you said, that gives you a bit of an insight into the characters behind them. And I think, you know, they do have these unique characters sort of honed from years of doing this job and doing it very well. And I think the one thing that I notice when I photograph them, they have this incredible ability to connect with people and engage with people across different cultures, different nationalities, and different countries. And it's, you know, it's really amazing to watch them kind of build a bond very quickly with people that they're meeting. You know, I suppose in the job of being a member of the royal family, you do meet a lot of people day to day, and, you know, using, they've, you know, a great sense of humor, the ability to not take yourself too seriously, and to always, I suppose, be on, if that makes sense. You know, rocking up in the morning with a smile and a sense of energy is something that I've always associated with are now King Charles, which always impresses me because I often get there feeling a little bit grumpy in the morning, and he has this great ability to kind of go straight into things. And I suppose that ties into the fact that many people are meeting the royals for the first time. It might be the most important day of their lives, and, you know, they realize that, and it's important.
Right. And you have some great, you know, behind the scenes photographs too of just the king, you know, walking with his mother in Buckingham Palace and things like that. So what was their relationship like in those quiet moments?
Yeah, you know, obviously incredibly sad time when Queen Elizabeth passed away last year. And I think, you know, she was unique, and she will always be remembered as this incredible individual around the world, this incredible historic person. And I have really good memories of photographing her. It was very surreal when she passed away. And I think the king obviously had a great relationship with the queen in all their interactions. And you can see that from some of the photos in the book. But the queen was an absolute consummate professional. Her sense of duty right to the end was just incredible. And there's one photograph I took in the queen's final year, one of her last official photographs, actually. And I little did I know it would be, but it was working on her red box up in Sandringham. It's in the book. And I think it kind of summed up to me, you know, that dedication to duty, but also with a smile on her face, you know, great sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that's rubbed off on the king. He's certainly got an incredible commitment. He works incredibly hard, you know, often until late at night. And he's a man who is very passionate about, you know, things like the environment. And I've listened to many, many of his speeches over the years, visited a huge amount of rainforests and visited places that have suffered from climate catastrophe, earthquakes, flooding, and you know, he of course has to do things a little bit differently now he's king, but I think that passion will always be there. And I think that's important.
Definitely. One of my favorite stories that you have in the book is the portrait of King Charles's 70th birthday and the bear costume that came out. Obviously, you know, you are still dealing with kids, even though they're royal kids, they're kids. So you have to, you know, come up with fun, creative ways to get those smile on their faces. Could you kind of tell me the story behind that?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you like that. You know, it's in this book, it's really special to share some of those kind of moments behind the camera, because obviously as a photographer, it's really important, you know, you try and make your subjects feel as relaxed as possible. And, you know, getting everyone looking in the right direction in a group picture is always a little bit of a challenge. So certainly a little bit nerve wracking beforehand. And yeah, it was lovely to get the opportunity to do that. As I say in the story, I got the bear costume slightly wrong initially. I tried it out my son in the bathroom thinking he'd absolutely love it, and he didn't. So I had to find a friendlier looking bear. But it was great. I mean, you know, obviously and the resultant picture was everyone sort of laughing. And for me, getting those kind of candid pictures where everyone's enjoying themselves, if it makes the viewer smile, then hopefully it's kind of elicited a response, and it's a good picture.
Did the kids love it? Were there any of them frightened at all?
I think, you know, apart from my son in the bath, it's yeah, it was just a nice way to make everyone feel relaxed.
Definitely. You photographed the Invictus Games for many years. How proud was King Charles of Harry in those moments?
Yeah, Invictus Games is something that I've absolutely loved photographing over the years. I think it's Prince Harry's like biggest achievement. Just seeing the competitors, getting to know them over the years, and seeing the impact it's had on them has been really special. And you know, I photographed it, the inaugural event, the inaugural, you know, the meetings and the run-up to the event. And so I've been lucky to have an insight into, you know, watching it grow over the years. And that's been really special. And I think seeing, you know, all the royals, I really remember vividly when they all came to the launch of the London Invictus Games. And of course, there was a sense of nerves behind the scenes. It was the first one, it was inaugural, it was a new idea, and it was a huge success. And you could clearly see it was a start of something special. It was lovely to see everyone together enjoying that moment, which was special.
Definitely. Are you hopeful that they will be at the coronation? Do you miss them being part of everyday working royal life?
Yeah, who knows? My job is always just to document these moments. And of course, over the last couple of years, it's been, you know, some incredible highs for the royal family, with things like moments like the Platinum Jubilee, and of course, some very sad low points with the death of Queen Elizabeth. And you know, I very much see my job as there to kind of document the ebbs and the flows and the ups and the downs, and just document these historic moments. And I don't know exactly what's happening for the coronation, that choreography. I just know it's going to be an exciting period that the nation's going to be behind.
But like you said, you have been documenting the highs and the lows for so many years. And I thought it was so interesting when you wrote that when you were photographing Prince Philip's funeral, that you had to learn pretty much like a whole new camera system the week before. Is that right?
Yeah, totally. I think you know, one of the special things about being a royal photographer is you are there for the moment. You can occasionally be quite visible when, you know, all the TV cameras from all around the world are rolling on these big moments. And so it's really important to kind of just be aware of that. And for me, at the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral, it was the first royal funeral I'd covered. You know, it's the first one we've had in my 20-year career. I haven't had something like that to cover. So I felt really nervous on the day, I think, and just being behind the scenes and documenting it in the best possible way was my absolute goal. But, you know, I didn't want to have any kind of impact on that moment. And so I had to learn a new mirrorless camera system, which was totally silent on the day. You know, in subsequent years, we've all switched to mirrorless now, a lot of people I know. And so I actually regularly shoot with totally silent cameras, which is great because you can very much be that fly on the wall and not have any impact on what's going on in front of you. But yeah, that was an incredibly poignant afternoon on that stunning spring day as the Duke of Edinburgh's coffin was carried on to be his Land Rover Defender under the Round Tower of Windsor Castle. And, you know, I'll never forget that. That was just really, really amazing to be a part of it.
Definitely a beautiful book to get your hands on. Some stunning pictures. I mean, he's been with the royal family for decades, so he really knows the ins and outs and what it takes to capture a really historic royal moment.
I know his books are all, is this his third book? I mean, they're all fantastic. Second, third,
yeah.
It's so beautiful.
So beautiful. It really is. It's great. And it's a great coffee table book too. All right, let's get into our pint-sized ballast. And Meghan Markle spent International Women's Day supporting an organization that helps expectant mothers and their children. She and members of the Archwell Foundation visited Los Angeles-based Charity Harvest Home. Now this is, they created a pop-up baby boutique, hosted lunch from a female-owned restaurant, and made donation to the charity, which helps provide housing, mental well-being support, and classes to expectant mothers who have faced challenges such as domestic violence, substance abuse, and homelessness. This is the work we want to see from Meghan and Harry.
Yes, exactly. Unfortunately, I think this is clouded by the family drama, the title drama, the christening that no one was invited to. Again, we just want them to lay low, keep their heads down, stay out of the royal headlines, and show us the good work you're doing, because this is exactly what we've been begging them to do for like 6 months.
Seriously, keep it coming, keep it up. That's what we want to talk about, not the drama. We'll leave the drama in the past. But I mean, every now and then we'll talk about some drama, but not all the time. We need the drama sometimes. All right, well, that is it for this week's episode of Royally Us. Make sure to keep commenting, keep subscribing, and we will see you guys next week.